friends, welcome back to another episode of the It's Murder Y'all podcast. I'm your host Amber, and with me today is a man who ain't no holla back girl, my husband Rob. Say hey, Rob.
Howdy, howdy. Let's get rowdy.
So we have somehow made it through our block of North Carolina murder cases, which means it's time to discuss some cases of Black women who are missing in the Tar Heel State. And I literally had to go back and double check that we'd actually done four North Carolina episodes because I apparently have no concept of time, and I thought we'd just started the state. At any rate, let's go ahead and dive into our Black and Missing in North Carolina cases. Our first case takes us to a place that I hope to live one day, Wilmington, North Carolina. Wilmington is a port city on the southeastern coast of North Carolina. As of the 2020 census, Wilmington had a population of over 115,000 people, which is huge compared to some of the places we've talked about on this podcast. I'm familiar with Wilmington because of two of the greatest teen soap operas of all time, Dawson's Creek and One Tree Hill, which were both filmed in Wilmington. Aside from that connection, I didn't really know much about Wilmington, so I was like, let me do a quick little goog. And I know that this is the It's Murder Y'all podcast, not the It's History Y'all, but I do want to share a piece of Wilmington history that I had never heard of, but that I feel is important for people to know about. So, and I know that you like history, Rob, so.
I do.
In the late 1800s, Wilmington was the largest city in North Carolina, and it was also a majority Black, racially integrated, prosperous city, with Black men owning businesses and serving in local government. In fact, by 1898, three of the 10 aldermen were Black. Aldermen were basically is like the city council. And the city also had Black health inspectors, postmasters, magistrates, policemen, as well as a Black coroner, jailer, and treasurer. There were Black-owned banks and a Black newspaper. Basically, Wilmington was a place where Black people were thriving in a post-Civil War, post-Reconstruction era South. That all changed, however, on November the 10th, 1898, when a group of 2,000 white supremacists stormed the publishing office of the Daily Record, which was the city's Black-owned newspaper. They set the building on fire, then moved to the streets where they destroyed other Black-owned businesses and opened fire on any Black man they saw. To this day, no one is sure exactly how many Black lives were lost that day, with estimates ranging from 60 to over 250. And if you want to get really mad, just know that of the trash bag leaders of that coup d'etat, four went on to serve as governor of North Carolina. Three went on to serve on the U.S. Senate, including the first woman appointed to the Senate, but she only served for one day. Two went on to serve in the U.S. House of Representatives, with one serving as the House Majority Leader. One went on to serve as Secretary of the Navy. One co-founded East Carolina University. One co-founded the North Carolina Bar Association. And one went on to serve as a Superior Court Judge and was also elected Lieutenant Governor of North Carolina. And fuck all of them. They all suck. This event, by the way, is known as the Wilmington Massacre of 1898, the Wilmington Insurrection of 1898, and the Wilmington Coup of 1898, in case you would like to learn more. So, bringing it back to modern day, by 2016, around 18 to 19% of the population of Wilmington was Black, and one of those residents was Ebony Shanetta Spears. Ebony was born on May 12, 1985, making her a Taurus, and she was the youngest of Harriet and Alfonso Rivers' four children. We don't know much about Ebony's younger life, but her mother said that she was very outgoing and outspoken, would talk to just about anybody, and loved being with her family and hanging with friends. In high school, Ebony gave birth to her daughter Anaya, who was her whole world. Sometime after graduating high school, Ebony moved to Georgia. She originally pursued modeling, even being accepted to the Casablanca Modeling School in Atlanta and booking a few jobs. But she needed income right away to support herself and Anaya, so she looked for more stable work. She attended Georgia Tech for a bit and worked for Comcast.
Doesn't that mean White House?
Does what?
Casablanca?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
Yep.
I'm sorry. I just was like, I think I know what that means.
Yeah, I'd never thought about that. But yeah, because Casa is house and Blanca, I think, is white.
See, listening to you do Duolingo has paid off.
There we go. So,
damn, I'm learning and I ain't even doing it.
Yep. So, she attended Georgia Tech for a bit and worked for Comcast, but in 2010, her mother, Harriet, had to have a surgery, so Ebony decided that would be a good time for her to go ahead and move back home. In early 2015, Ebony began struggling with health issues. She was weak, achy, exhausted, and freezing cold all the time. After months of doctor's appointments, tests, and emergency room visits, Ebony was eventually diagnosed with lupus in the summer of 2015. According to the National Institute of Health, Lupus is a chronic, long-lasting autoimmune disease that can affect many parts of the body. Lupus occurs when the immune system, which normally helps protect the body from infection and disease, attacks its own tissues. This attack causes inflammation and, in some cases, permanent tissue damage, which can be widespread, affecting the skin, joints, heart, lung, kidneys, circulating blood cells, and brain. If you have lupus, you may experience periods of illness, flares, and periods of wellness, remission. Lupus flares can be mild to serious, and they are unpredictable. However, with treatment, many people with lupus can manage the disease. So not only are you learning history, well, murder, you're also getting history, you're getting vocabulary lessons, and you're learning about health conditions. So it's just weird. We're bringing you everything today. According to her family, Ebony's lupus diagnosis had a huge impact on her attitude, outlook on life, and mental health, as it triggered a significant bout of depression. So I can say from my own personal experience, having recently dealt with an autoimmune issue, that it can bring on a lot of negative feelings, and it can cause you to feel really negatively towards your body, because with an autoimmune disorder, your body's basically attacking itself, and you feel like, A, what did I do to deserve this? Like, why is my body betraying me? B, how is this going to impact the other areas of my life? C, how is this going to affect my ability to live my life? So it's a lot to deal with, because you have A, the health issue itself, and then the feelings that go along with it. In addition to the stress that inherently comes along with a chronic illness, Ebony was also having to deal with sudden weight gain, which was a side effect of her lupus medication. Ebony had always been very tiny, and it was hard for her to accept the way in which her body had changed. And I also relate to that. As a millennial woman, I was raised that being skinny is more important than anything else. And having been a chubby kid who later lost weight, I've always been very aware of my weight and very afraid of gaining weight, to the point that, like, I won't take medicine if it's going to make me gain weight. That's a deal breaker for me. And I know that it's dumb and that it's like my own internalized fat phobia. But I say all that to say I can understand how Ebony was feeling in that situation. So lupus had had a profound effect on Ebony, and she'd been struggling a lot with her depression. In January 2016, Ebony really wasn't feeling great, so she called her parents to see if they could take care of Anaya for her for a few days. When Ebony would have flares, either lupus flares or depression flares, she had trouble taking care of herself, to the point that she had to be reminded to take medicine or even eat. So she knew she couldn't care for Anaya the way that she needed to. So of course her parents come and get Anaya, and they spend the next few days kind of low-key keeping an eye on Ebony, making sure she's okay. Things really started going downhill on Thursday, January 14th, when Harriet got a call from Ebony's boyfriend. Harriet, Ebony's mama, said she wasn't actually sure if he was Ebony's boyfriend or just like a friend, but that she was pretty sure they'd rekindled their relationship recently. Anyway, so the dude friend, we'll call him the dude friend, calls and lets Harriet know that Ebony was driving down Highway 7476 going 100 miles an hour. So Harriet asked the dude friend to try to keep up with her as best he could, and that Harriet and her husband would meet them at Ebony's place. Well, Ebony didn't go home like they thought she would. Instead, for whatever reason, she went to the Wilmington Police Department. So shortly before this incident, Ebony and her parents had had a conversation about how if her mental health got really bad, they would need to seek help for her. So basically, they would have her committed, and she agreed. Well, on this day, she wasn't having it, and she was pissed that her mama would even bring it up. So her daddy goes into the police station and explains the situation, explains that, you know, Ebony's having a mental health crisis, and they wanted to have her committed to behavioral health. EMS shows up. They talk to Ebony, they talk to her parents, and they're like, she says she doesn't need to go. So Harriet calls Ebony's psychiatrist and tells her what's going on. Ebony says that she will agree to go to the emergency room to get checked out if the psychiatrist would meet her there. But unfortunately, the psychiatrist had something going on and couldn't meet her at the ER. So Harriet tells the psychiatrist that Ebony needed medicine, and the psychiatrist is like, look, I can prescribe the same thing that should get at behavioral health. So she calls in a prescription to Ebony's pharmacy, but unfortunately, she wouldn't be able to get in the medicine until the next day. Ultimately, the EMS say that they can't force her to go get help, so they leave. Once Ebony seemed to be coherent, she went back to her apartment, and a friend agreed to stay with her overnight to keep an eye on her. The next morning, so this is January 15th, Ebony's daddy went over to her apartment to check on her and make sure that she took her medicine and ate something. When he got there, she told him that she wasn't hungry and that her dude friend was going to bring her some tea and a muffin. Her daddy waited until the dude friend got there, and then he left. So Ebony had an appointment downtown that day, and dude friend was supposed to drive her, but something came up and he couldn't, so another guy friend offered to take her. He would later tell Harriet that Ebony was acting strange when he got there, but he didn't say anything to anybody, which I think pissed Harriet off a little bit, because apparently he was really good friends with Ebony's brother. So Harriet was like, why wouldn't you call her brother and be like, hey, something's going on with your sister? Now, there are some discrepancies regarding what happened over the next few hours, with the Charlie Project saying one thing and the Vantage podcast saying another, and then another article saying something else. I'm going to base this timeline on the Vanished podcast because it all came from Harriet, who is, by nature of being Ebony's mother, much more familiar with this case than anybody else. According to Harriet's interview with the Vanished podcast, at around 5 p.m. that day, a family friend who worked for the Boys and Girls Club saw Ebony walking down Fifth Street. He took her to the Boys and Girls Club. He told her to wait there. He had to go do something. He'd come back and he would take her wherever she wanted to go. Unfortunately, we don't know where it was that she wanted to go. So she gets to the Boys and Girls Club and her cell phone is dead. So she asks if anybody there has a charger, but no one does. Short while later, Ebony leaves the Boys and Girls Club and walks to the Wilmington Police Department, which was just a few minutes away. When she got to the police station, she asked to use the phone, so they pointed her to the courtesy phone. Surveillance footage would show Ebony going over to the phone, then going back to the window where an officer was, saying something to the officer, going back to the phone, then back to the window, and then she went off into another area, which the police said she went to the bathroom. Detective Joshua Childress told NBC News that Ebony had come to use the phone, and while the phone was working, she seemed to be having some kind of difficulty and wasn't able to complete the call. He went on to say, she did seem very anxious. I believe they described her as being a little erratic, which explained why she had so much difficulty attempting to use the phone. Harriet told the Vantage podcast that she got conflicting stories about what had happened and why no one helped Ebony. One story was that Ebony got irate and cussed at the officer. Another story was that Ebony reeked of alcohol, which Harriet didn't believe, saying that's not Ebony's nature. Detective Childress claims that the desk officer did offer to assist her, asked her if she needed anything, asked her if she needed to see EMS just because she appeared to be so anxious, and she refused any assistance. Harriet called bullshit and told the police, when did y'all start giving out free passes not to go to jail when someone comes in a police department acting up? I love Harriet. She brings up a good point, though, because A, how many people just come into a police office or a police station, like upset, crying, very like visibly anxious and erratic? Like, that seems weird. And B, I would imagine that most people in a mental health crisis would decline assistance. Like, one time I fainted in Ron's barbecue, and when I woke up, they told me that the ambulance was on the way, but I was so embarrassed that I got up and left before the ambulance could get there because I was like, I would rather die than all these people see me get strapped to this gurney. So then my parents ended up taking me to the ER because, as it turns out, I did need medical attention. So you can't really, like, in those situations necessarily go by what the person says.
Yeah.
But I mean, and again, Harriet brings up a good point of like, since when are y'all not concerned about a person acting up in your police station? Like, it's weird.
Right.
Well, eventually Ebony leaves the police station of her own volition and goes back to her apartment at Taylor Home Estates in the 1300 block of Brooklyn Lane in Wilmington. She was supposed to have dinner at her parents' house that night, but she couldn't drive over there because her parents had taken her keys because they didn't want her driving. So they called to see if she wanted them to come pick her up. The first time they called, she didn't answer. She called back a little while later and told her mother that she had eaten a salad, so she was good and she wouldn't be coming over for dinner. Harriet asked her what she was doing, and she told her mother that she was outside smoking a cigarette and that she was about to go back inside. Harriet did not feel like she was telling the truth, and as it turns out, she wasn't. Ebony was not at home like she said she was. She was actually walking up and down the street. According to a man who was visiting relatives in the apartment complex at the time, he was outside smoking a cigarette at about 10:45 when Ebony stopped and asked him if he could give her a cigarette. He told her that he only had one, so she said that she was going to go walk down to a nearby store to buy a pack. So I've maybe smoked 3 cigarettes in my whole life, and that was in college. So I'm not familiar with the culture. Is it normal for people to just like come up and ask you for a cigarette? And if so, is it proper smoker etiquette to give them one if you have it?
I wouldn't give somebody my last cigarette if I didn't know them well. Like, there was only a few people, even when I did smoke habitually, that I would say, no, man, it's cool. It's the last. I don't give a shit. You can have it. It's no big deal, brother. Or whoever, you know what I mean?
But if you had more than one?
It's good cigarette karma to share. You don't like all smokers hate a mooch, and every cigarette smoker knows a mooch. But in general, even with some hesitancy, most people that smoke cigarettes will give out a cigarette if they're, you know,
It is, again, it can be situational, you know.
I wasn't sure if it was similar to like being a woman in a public bathroom. If another woman asks you for a pad or a tampon and you have one, you're going to share it. Like that's right. A part of the lady code of ethics. I just didn't
slide them under the stall.
100%.
It's funny.
I mean, you gotta help a sister out. Like we've all been there. So I wasn't sure if it was a similar thing with smokers.
I feel like, so I guess to be more specific, which I don't know if anybody gives a shit, but like if that guy was smoking and she walked by, like if you were actively smoking a cigarette and like, that's more than likely the when you're going to get accosted for a cigarette the most.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, that makes sense. So Ebony's dude friend showed up at her apartment at 11 p.m. So that was 15 minutes after her little run-in with the neighbor or the visiting neighbor guy. And there was
Is after the cops, after the police station incident? This is all after that?
Yeah. So there was a police station incident the night before where the EMS came. And then there's the police incident this evening where she wants to use the phone and it doesn't work and she leaves. So yes, it's that evening. So it's 11 o'clock and there's no sign of Ebony. So the dude friend, he tries calling her phone, but it keeps going straight to voicemail. So he just lets himself into her apartment and he waits for 2 hours to see if she'd come home. But she never did. So 1 a.m., he decides to call her parents, hoping that she was with them. But she wasn't. So her parents started calling around to friends and family to see if anybody had seen her, but nobody had. The next morning, Ebony's daddy went to her apartment to see if anything was missing or messed up or disturbed in any way. And it wasn't. Harriet knew immediately that something was wrong, though, because Ebony's medicine and her purse were both there. And that was a big red flag to her. Now, I don't really carry a purse anymore. So it wouldn't be a big deal if my purse was still at home. Plus, I doubt you would even know if one of my purses was missing because I have so many and they're kind of strewn everywhere.
You know, a man has a wallet. Women have purses.
Many. Okay, so before I tell you what I think the big red flag would be for me, what do you think? Like, if you saw an item or items at home and I wasn't here, what would make you be like, oh shit, this is not right?
Your phone. Probably your phone.
You're halfway right. My phone and my emotional support water bottle.
Yeah, but you have...
Oh, but you wouldn't know which one I'm using necessarily right at the moment.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like which of the silos of water that you're toting around at any given time, it's got low on the totem pole of shit I pay attention to for general security.
Yeah. I mean, usually it's either, like right now, it's either my Stanley cup or my big, like giant one that's got the handle that's like from my work. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes I'll just buy like one at the gas station. I didn't think about that. But to me, I have to have my emotional support water bottle at all times. But yeah, probably my phone. I don't go anywhere without my phone because I'm addicted to it. And if I was leaving willingly, I would 100% have to take all my ADHD medicine with me because otherwise I wouldn't be able to function. But I don't even think you know, A, what all medicine I take and B, where it is.
Yeah, I wouldn't know where to fucking even start looking.
Yeah. Maybe that's all part of my plan. Maybe I'm not actually messy. Maybe I'm just trying to keep everybody on their toes. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
I'm on my toes plenty.
Yep. So at this point, Ebony's parents are panicking. So they call the Wilmington Police Department to file a missing persons report. Here's what chaps my ass about this case. Although an officer did take the report that Saturday, the family didn't actually talk to a detective until Monday, and detectives didn't start searching until Tuesday. Harriet was told that because it was a holiday weekend, that Monday was Martin Luther King Jr. Day, nobody was on duty, so they had to wait until they were fully staffed to look for Ebony. Since when do police take off for holidays? Especially not like Christmas. Like, crimes happen on holidays. Like, also, have they not watched an episode of 48 Hours? Like, those first 2 days are crucial, and they missed it because of a holiday? Like, if they didn't start searching until Tuesday, that's day four. That's 48 hours times two, which is not good. Like, I never would have thought that there wouldn't be, you know, somebody there.
One would think.
Like, that's crazy. And at least that's what Harriet said they told her. So the family was not pleased with the police department dragging their ass. So they reached out to the Community United Effort, also known as the Q Center, which is a local organization that searches for missing people. despite numerous searches conducted by the Kew Center, even sending volunteers down to Georgia where Ebony had once lived, Ebony has never been found. There have been several rumors about what may have happened to her, including one pretty pervasive rumor that she had stolen a bunch of money from an ex-boyfriend in Atlanta and that he'd come to and gotten her. Ebony moved from Georgia back to North Carolina in 2010. And she didn't go missing until 2016. Like, why would he wait 6 years? That don't make no sense. And as her mother told the Vanish podcast, quote, Ebony came back home broke as a snail, end quote, which I had never heard before, but it was funny. So if she had stolen this money from him, where was that money? Because she didn't have it when she moved back to North Carolina. Plus, according to Ebony's sister, Lynetta, no one knows who the ex-boyfriend is, including the people that told the police about an ex-boyfriend that that Ebony allegedly stole from. Like, Ebony talked to her mama literally every single day. Like, don't you think Harriet would have known about this so-called boyfriend? Like, that story just doesn't even make any sense. In her interview with the Vanish podcast, Lynetta mentioned a party that Ebony had attended with friends at the Hilton Hotel just prior to going missing, and she wonders if something happened at that party that caused Ebony's mental health to spiral. Oddly enough, no one at that party, not even close friends of Ebony's, including a cousin who was almost like a sister, like none of them will say anything about the party or what they think might have happened to Ebony. That's a little suspicious.
Pretty much.
Harriet told the Vanish podcast that she believes Ebony is either being contained somewhere or she's not alive. She doesn't believe that she'd just leave her family like that, especially not Anaya, who was 13 years old when Ebony disappeared. She said that Ebony is the most responsible child she has. She always plans stuff out. And Anaya was always her top priority. If she'd willingly gone somewhere, she would have either taken Anaya with her or asked her parents to keep her while she was gone. A popular theory is that Ebony had some type of medical emergency, but Harriet doesn't think so. She told the Vanish podcast, quote, if she had a medical accident, where would she go to have it? She would leave her house to go have a medical accident. Her medicine was at home. Her purse was at home. Her ID was at home. Everything was in her apartment, end quote. And we'll talk more about this later. Ebony, spelled Ebonee, Shanetta Spears, was 30 years old when she went missing on January 15th, 2016. She is a black female, 5'7 to 5'8, 140 to 150 pounds, and her hair was dyed blonde at the time of her disappearance. She was last seen wearing a burgundy or purple sweatshirt, a white shirt, blue jeans, brown leather Timberland boots, and a pink knit cap. She has a tattoo of a rose on her right shoulder and a tattoo of a butterfly on the top of her right foot. If you have any information about the disappearance of Ebony Spears, you can call the Wilmington Police Department at 910-343-3686. Our next case takes us up to Gastonia, North Carolina. Pretty Ashley Porter, who went by Ashley, was born on April the 2nd, 1987, making her an Aries, to her mother, Tanya Davis. As is often the case, we don't really know much about Ashley's life, other than she had a younger brother named Chauncey, graduated from Ashbrook High School in 2007, and worked in manufacturing. On April 19th, 2009, 22-year-old Ashley had dinner with her mama and stepdad at their home on Windy Hill Drive. After dinner, Ashley logged into MySpace and hung out there for a while. Oh, MySpace. Literally one of the greatest and worst parts of the early 2000s internet. Like, on one hand, it was like Facebook, but better, because you could personalize your background, and you could play music, and it had all of us millennials out here, like, doing HTML coding, which I've completely forgotten how to do. But on the other hand, it forced you to publicly rate all of your friends, which I can't believe was a thing that we willingly did. Like, how did that
not... I liked doing the... putting the shit in the top 10 that wasn't your friends. Like the...
Like Tom?
No, like the... It would be like letters like, I love everybody, or some weird shit, or like...
I don't remember you doing that.
I think I remember doing it. And maybe that was toward the end, because I got tired of the, you're not your number one. I got to be the number one.
I know me well enough to know that that was 100% me. If you hadn't had me at number one, I would have pitched a fit.
Sounds about right.
Yep. So after perusing the interwebs, Ashley went outside and chatted with a neighbor before coming back inside at 10 p.m. and telling her mama goodnight. I would be your number one now, right?
Top five at least.
I hate you so much. I know who would be number one.
Who?
Hoagie.
I would say Hoagie and Matt.
Yeah, it has to be a member of the video game Man Barbie Club. I'll just be hanging out over here, number three.
Who's number two if you're number three? Livy?
No, because Livy's She's not old enough to have
Oh, I didn't
MySpace.
Mean to do that.
No, Hoagie at one, Matt at two, me at three.
No, I'm not gonna put two dudes in front of my wife.
So just one.
Yeah.
You'll make a sandwich. Have one at one at three, me and two. I hate you. So, the next morning, Ashley's mama wanted to get a coat out of Ashley's closet. So she went and knocked on her bedroom door. There was no answer. So she tried to open the door and it was locked. She went and got her husband to come open the door. And when he did, they saw the screen to Ashley's bedroom window sitting on the floor, but there was no Ashley. Like in Ebony's case, all of Ashley's important stuff, like her money, purse, and cell phone, were still there. It's just Ashley that was missing. Although she went missing in the late evening of April 19th or early morning hours of April 20th, Ashley wasn't reported missing until April 27th, which was a full week later. According to the Charlie Project, Ashley's mother waited to report her missing because she thought she was probably just with friends. There's very little information out there about this case, which, according to the Gaston Gazette, is because the Gastonia police don't want to risk jeopardizing the investigation, which is now suspected to involve foul play. Ashley's mother believes that perhaps Ashley's abusive ex-boyfriend might be involved. That ex-boyfriend was not allowed in Ashley's home, so her mother wonders if maybe he went to her window to get her attention, since he couldn't just knock on the door or ring the doorbell. According to the Charlie Project, this ex-boyfriend has not been identified, and it is unclear if he was involved in the case. Pretty, spelled Priti, Ashley Porter, was 22 years old when she went missing on April 19th, 2009. She's a black female, 5'3",
Her name was
140.
Pretty Ashley Porter.
Yeah, her first name was Pretty, and she went by Ashley.
That's cool.
She's a black female, 5'3", 140 to 150 pounds. She was known to wear eyeglasses, but those glasses were not with her at the time of her disappearance. She was last seen wearing a 14-karat gold necklace with her name Pretty on it, a 14-karat gold necklace with a heart pendant, gray sneakers, and possibly jeans and a black t-shirt with the words "Put a ring on it." She had a tattoo on her butt, a burn scar on her left hand between her thumb and pointer finger, and a mole, I say beauty mark, in the middle of her forehead. If you have any information about the disappearance of Pretty Ashley Porter, you can call the Gastonia Police Department at 704-866-6879. And our last case takes us up to Winston-Salem. Samantha Elizabeth Barrymore was born on December 30th, 1979. Megan, her a Capricorn. I'm also a Capricorn. We love it. And grew up in Lexington, North Carolina, which is a little over 20 miles south of Winston-Salem. Before we go any further,
When you say Capricorn, this is a fucking silly brain synapse for me, but I think about it makes me think of Romeo and Juliet, like Capulet and
oh,
Capricorn for some reason.
I was like, what? That's
Yeah,
funny. Yeah,
I
I
don't
can
know
see that.
why.
That's cute. So before we go any further, I want to acknowledge that I am not 100% confident about the pronunciation of Samantha's name. I'm not even 50% confident because it looks like Samantha without the N. So in some sources, I've heard say Samantha, and some said Samatha. So my brain wants Samantha to come out. So I'm going to go with Samantha, and I deeply apologize if I'm wrong. Names are really, really important, and I really do try my best to pronounce them correctly. I just don't have anything to go on in this situation. So we're going with Samantha, and I might even mess that up.
Don't
So
make it a thing, bud.
I'm making it a thing. So unfortunately, there's pretty much zero information about Samantha's life. We know that she had a daughter when she was in high school, and that in 2000, she moved to Winston-Salem to become a stripper. Her mother, Barbara Ash, told the Winston-Salem Journal that she had warned Samantha that if she kept living the life she was living in Winston-Salem, she'd end up dead. Samantha worked as a dancer at Sugar Bear's, and her stage name was Sunshine, which Sugar Bear's manager, Bob Evans, said was a good fit for her since she was always smiling. I just keep thinking about the macaroni and cheese you used to buy and the mashed potatoes, the Bob Evans.
Oh, yeah. That's
Samantha,
funny.
Samantha didn't have a car, so her sister Walt Tex would often drive her places. When Walt Tex showed up at Sugar Bear's on the evening of April the 8th, 2006, Samantha wasn't waiting for her like normal. When she asked an employee of the club, they said that Samantha wasn't there. Walt Tex went back the next night, and again, Samantha wasn't there. This time, a club employee told her that Samantha hadn't been there for a few days. Walt Tex was immediately concerned and called her mother to let her know something was up. The next morning, April 10th, Walt Tex, Samantha's other sister, Erica, and Samantha's cousin, Althea Brody, went all over Winston-Salem looking for Samantha, but no one had seen her. They decided to drive to the apartment that Samantha shared with her boyfriend, Cedric Bobby Lemon. The two had been dating for a little over a year. They'd met when he was a bouncer at a club that she danced at. From what I gather, the relationship was pretty rocky, and Samantha had considered leaving Cedric. When the ladies got inside Samantha's apartment, they saw all of her stuff, including the dance bag that she took literally everywhere, packed up next to the door. Just like Ebony's purse being at home was a red flag, this bag being there was a huge red flag. Cedric told Waltex that he and Samantha had gotten into an argument on the morning of April the 6th and she had just left. According to him, he had told her that he didn't want to marry her and she told him that she was going to go get a newspaper and look for a new place to live. He said, "We had a few words. We didn't leave on good terms." He went on to say that she has left before and maybe gone and stayed away for a couple of days. And I thought maybe this was one of them. The sisters were like, "Yeah, this is sus," and they filed a missing persons report. Though we don't have much information about the investigation, shocking, I know, we do know that Samantha was seen leaving the Sugar Bears VIP Club on Martin Luther King Jr. Drive in Winston-Salem during the early morning hours of April 6, 2006. She got, 2004. I think I've been saying 2006. It is definitely 2004. She got into a Willard Cab Company taxi.
It feels like a lifetime ago.
I know. It was.
Like, it feels like at least a half a lifetime ago.
I mean, at this point, it was. We old. She got into a Willard Cab Company.
Like, sorry, but no. Like, some, like, the way I remember, like, memories from back then, like, the clarity in which I remember specific memories is starting. I can tell there's like a haziness to them. Like, you know what I mean?
Yes. And it makes me really sad to think about. That's why I can't, because I will dwell on it and it will make me very sad and like weirdly anxious. I think going back to my whole mortality anxiety that I talked about last episode. But like, on one hand, it feels like it was just yesterday. But on the other hand, it's like that was 700 years ago. Like, I was a totally different human.
Well, sometimes like it jolts me because you'll say, "You remember when?" And I'm like, years ago, I would be like, "Oh yeah." But now I'm like, do I really remember that shit or not?
Yeah, I think I've got a better memory than you do. I'll be remembering all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Samantha got into a Willard Cab Company taxi and has never been heard from again. Considering that her dance bag, which she had all of her shit in, her makeup, her dance, of all of it, considering that her dance bag was found at her apartment, it's safe to say that she at least made it back there. 2.5 weeks after Samantha's disappearance, Cedric was arrested on a felony probation violation for failing to appear in court. He claimed that during that time, police questioned him for hours about Samantha, took blood samples, and gave him a lie detector test, though police would not confirm nor deny that. Cedric did offer a $10,000 reward to anyone with information that would lead to Samantha. Apparently, Cedric had recently settled a lawsuit against Sean Diddy Combs after claiming that Diddy, who was known as Puff Daddy at the time of the alleged incident, had hired bodyguards to attack him after a 1995 concert at Joel Coliseum. Why Diddy would hire bodyguards to beat up this random guy is beyond me. And due to the terms of the settlement, we don't know how much money Cedric got. What we do know, though, is that Cedric died of a drug overdose in 2018. And that's it. As Patrick Wilson wrote in the Winston-Salem Journal in 2006, if the Winston-Salem police are doing anything on Barrymore's case, it's not clear. Samantha spelled...
That's a very wordsmithy way of saying they ain't doing a damn thing.
Yep. I love it. Samantha spelled S-A-M-A-T-H-A. Elizabeth Barrymore was 24 years old when she went missing on April 6, 2004. She's a black female, 5'6", 115 pounds. Her nickname was Pinky, and her stage name was Sunshine.
Pinky.
We do
Pinky,
not...
Pinky, Sunshine, Samantha.
We do not know what she was wearing when she went missing. She has a tattoo of her late father's name on her thigh, but I've not been able to find out what his name was.
I'd feel some type of way if my daughter ran around with my name on her thigh. I'm like, you don't, please, you don't have to do that.
Yeah.
Just, could you do a flower, do a little, just a little flower. And you and I know that flower means I love my daddy.
Yep. Or like in the case of Archie, she'd get like a number 3.
Oh, that would be the shit. I would respect that so hard.
She would do that too.
Oh, I would respect that. That might be the coolest thing of my lifetime. If that ever happened.
That's really funny.
I might even tear up. I would be filled with pride.
I'm going to put that little nugget in her brain. Be like, hey, in like 8, 10 years, You can go get this tattoo. I'll go with you. If you have any information about the disappearance of Samantha Barrymore, you can call the Winston-Salem Police Department at 336-773-7700. And those were the cases of Ebony Spears, Ashley Porter, and Samantha Barrymore. So, Rab, what are your thoughts? What do you think happened to these ladies?
Seems like fuckery.
Definitely some fuckery. Any specific fuckery?
Shenanigans and so on. I'm telling you, people that disappear, either there's like no information and it's just like a hole in the earth swallowed them up and we'll never see them again, or there was some sketchy shit that was going on at right around the time of their disappearance. I feel like sometimes hearing these missing people stories makes me think about like how many like decisions or circumstances any given person is away from disappearing. You know what I mean?
I know.
Remember like that case of the lady that wandered into that hotel and ended up in the water tower on the roof of it? And they were like, how the fuck?
Elisa Lamb.
Yeah, how do you fit into the thing? And like, what the, you know what I mean? It's like, how, like, there was a certain amount of circumstances that ultimately led to her being in that thing.
Mm-hmm.
But like, they're weird as shit. And a lot of these cases, it's like something weird or air quotes out of character happened. And then all of a sudden, the motherfucker's on a milk carton. You know what I mean?
I know. I know I mentioned it in an earlier episode, but the one that always sticks with me is Jennifer Kesey, the 80 Pie, the former 80 Pie that went missing in Florida. I may end up doing that on this podcast at some point because it really is one of my, like, it is one of the cases that I follow very closely. Any other thoughts as to what may have happened?
No, just that thought, just that sketchy shit happens. It makes me hella anxious and paranoid about when our child is going to get of an age to where she can be out in the world without our direct supervision.
I'm glad you said that. So in my notes, I wrote this. It's a quote that Harriet said on the Vanish podcast, and I just couldn't find a place to put it. So, but it goes with what you just said. So Harriet said in the opening of that episode, just because they're adults and they feel like they're grown and know everything, you still need to keep up with your child. Know their friends, know where they're going, know where they're hanging out, know what they're doing. Get to really know your child. Keep the lines of communication open with your child because you never know what's going to happen. That's what I've learned. And I'm like, that's the damn truth. Like, even when they're grown, like, you need to know.
That type of shit in and of itself for me is like part of the reason why, like, I will speak to her every day, whether she lives under my roof or not. I'm going to talk to my daughter every day.
Oh, for sure.
Fucking day.
Cause that's the only,
it is a non-negotiable.
Like, that's how you can keep track and know if like something's weird, like, okay, your voice seems off today, or like,
right,
the vibes are weird. Like, if you don't talk to them regularly, you won't know.
I make it a point to have some type of meaningful conversation with her, even if it's just small talk, every single day. Every single day, I don't think about shit, and my attention ain't on shit, but sometimes it's a 5-minute conversation. Sometimes we jabber on whatever, but that's part of it, dude.
She asked me last night if she went missing, would we keep her room the same? I was like, God, you were your mother's child. I was like, yes, I would keep your room exactly the same. As long as we lived in this house, it would be exactly the same. I was like, have you met me? I'm like the most like sentimental, emotional person ever. And I'm going to tell another story about her at the end. But here are my thoughts on what happened. Number one, what is that?
That's my phone. That's my bad. I forgot.
Group chat is popping.
Yeah.
Tell them you'll be there to play Man Barbies in just a little bit.
It's Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh, that's not Man Barbies. I mean, it's a little bit Man Barbies. I call his video games Man Barbies because he does a lot of like role play stuff.
Whoa. Can we that, just, that's a that, little.
No one knows. You just said you play.
Well, they
Dungeons
do now.
You just said you play Dungeons and Dragons. Is that not role play?
Yeah, it is role play, I guess. Technically,
that is one game out of the 700 you play.
Okay.
Anyways, I think that Ebony had a mental health crisis, and then something happened to her. Like, I don't know if she like wandered off. So because, I mean, I don't know how far away she was from the water, but Wilmington's on the water. So, or someone took advantage of of her in that state, which the thought of being out somewhere and having a medical crisis is so scary. Like, that would be such a helpless feeling. And I get annoyed with you sometimes, like when I'm 10 minutes late getting home because the Walmart pharmacy was taking forever and you send me two texts and two phone calls in like a 2 minute period. But it's good that you keep tabs because I would hate to be out somewhere and faint and not know what's going on or not be able to communicate what's wrong. That's a very vulnerable state to be in.
Well, I just, you understand that, like, it's not that I'm trying to keep tabs. It's that I have, like, I have your ways dialed the fuck in. And so, I don't know. It was a spotty senses thing. It was like,
they were wrong. It was just Walmart.
No. Well, it's like, if my antenna goes off and it's like, she should be pulling up any minute. I'm going to give it another couple minutes. And then my internal clock is like, and then I'll text. And usually you respond. But like in that case, I texted and I guess it didn't go through. I didn't see that it didn't go through. And then I call and then nothing. And I'm like, because I know where you should be at that given time on that day. And then when I was like, all right, I'm gonna give her a minute here or two to call back. And then I'm like, all right, I'm just gonna call back. And then it went straight to voicemail. And I was like, what the fuck?
So what would you
not have, that you were being sketchy, but like,
right. So what would you have done then, if I hadn't like answered or like the next time you called? Because it went to voicemail because we were calling each other at the same time.
Well, not to get very deep off in my very meticulous brain, but at the point of I need confirmation, I'm not getting confirmation. I was about to go into, all right, we're going to do about a 20 to 25, 30 minute grace period here. I'm going to chill my shit, but I am on high alert because this is out of character, or at least out of regular day-to-day rhythm. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I would give it another 20 or 30. And then I would like, all right, now I'm going to pester you until you respond back because.
But what if I didn't?
There's just a multitude of things.
See, if you would just get an iPhone, I could share my location. We may just need to get like Life 360 because you, like, I sit here and talk about you doing it, but like, if you go somewhere, I will panic. I mean, that's just my natural setting anyway, but like, if I call.
Yeah, but I feel like for me, like.
Because I'm weak and defenseless.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, there's not many situations out in the wild that. If like I would crawl back home on my hands and knees if that meant I had to be back home somehow. You know what I mean?
I'm not exerting anything. You know what I mean?
Like if it was that imperative, you know. So and whenever I'm out and about, I'm never more than a few minutes from home unless I'm out somewhere for work. You know what I mean?
I'm always afraid you've gotten in a car accident. Because I've ridden in the car with you.
Right. I don't know. Even if I got into an accident, it wouldn't be my fault. I'll tell you that. And I'm good at, I have my wreck avoidance and crash avoidance is impeccable.
Okay, Earnhardt.
People drive like shit in Knoxville.
That is true. So back to my thoughts. I think Ashley left with the ex-boyfriend. And either he did something to her or she just like started a new life somewhere.
Usually
I don't think someone just went and started a new life, but I think she might have. And then I think that Cedric did something to Samantha. And as I was writing this episode, especially like there was a comment that that Ebony's sister, Lynetta, said about how like Ebony wouldn't have gotten in the car with somebody that she didn't know. And I'm like, I would definitely never get into a car with someone I didn't know. And then I was writing Samantha's story and I got to the part about the strip club manager and I was like, oh shit, I definitely did get in a car with a stranger one time and I didn't even think about it. So I've alluded to it before, but I will give you all the short condensed version of the night that I thought I was going to die. I'd gone with my niece and a group of her friends to a strip club in Birmingham as part of my niece's bachelorette party. Hopefully she's okay with me telling this on the podcast. Can't remember why, but we parked like down the road from the strip club And so we had to walk down this busy highway, which was also sketchy because it was at night. So Go Strip Club, we're there until it closes. We walk back to the car, and when we get there, the chick that was driving realized that she didn't have her keys. So we walk back down the busy highway to the strip club, which is now closed. And thankfully, the manager slash bouncer was about to leave. So he let us in to look for the keys, and she couldn't find them. So he walked us back to where our car was parked so that we could like look around on the ground and stuff. Because we were in Birmingham. We were like an hour from home. It was like 1 o'clock in the morning. So they're like, we needed keys. And so she was looking, and then he's like, y'all, this is not a good area. Y'all really need to get out of here. And so we're like, oh, that helps. So he went and got the van that belonged to the strip club, and he offered to take us back to our hotel, which is like 15 or 20 minutes away. And all of us dumbass girls who were all in our 20s, we just get into this van with this man that we don't know. And I remember sitting on the floor of the van, in the back of the van, like, well, this is it. This is how I die. But thankfully, he actually was just nice, and he took us to the hotel and he left. But so I can see her all high and mighty, like, I wouldn't take a ride from a stranger when I absolutely took like a 2 a.m. ride with a complete stranger who was also a strip club manager slash bouncer. And you were not pleased with me when you found out about that.
I was none too pleased, to be fair.
Yeah. You don't like when I be making unsafe life choices.
Well, it was a lot of decisions that got broke down in that whole scenario.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a weird night. So before we leave, I have to do this in honor of our daughter. So I was going to actually write a little piece about this and I forgot, but we went this past weekend to go get barbecue from this barbecue place, and we're ordering. It was really good too. We're ordering, and our kid looks next to the door, and there's this missing person sign. And I don't know what it was, but it got to her. Like, she was like studying it. She talked about that case the whole time when we waited for them to make the food, the whole way home. She talked about it that night. She mentioned it last night when she asked me if we would keep her room the way it is if she went missing. So, Byron Edwards went missing in Knoxville in March of 2021, and he had a heart defect, and so he really needed his medication. He was about to have a baby girl, I think, the next month. I don't really have a lot more information about it, but for sake of our daughter, I at least want to be able to tell her that, hey, I mentioned Byron's case on the podcast. So if y'all are in or around Knoxville, just Byron Edwards, Byron Edwards, and see if maybe you know anything about the case. So thank y'all so much for listening to the It's Murder Y'all podcast. As always, sources for this episode will be listed in the show notes and also at itsmurderyall.com, but probably in a couple weeks because I'm behind on putting those up. A big shout out once again to the Vanish podcast. I know I say it every time, but seriously, go check it out. It is so good for missing persons cases. Please subscribe, rate, review, tell a friend, tell your mama. We'll see y'all next week. Lord willing, and the creek don't rise.
Holler.